Coming up, Mike gives you a mobile boost, Tanya's got a keyboard for your phone, or is it for your laptop, and I give a redemption to the ZTE hotspot, or is it a projector? You gotta watch before you buy.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Before You Buy is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Hello and welcome to Before You Buy. It's Twit's product review show, where we take the gadgets and the gizmos that we receive here at the Twit Brickhouse and we give them out to members of the staff to get the most honest review that we can get out of them. I'm Father Robert Ballister, the digital Jesuit, and we're going to start with something that some of you may want, a phone not from one of the major carriers. We gave a mobile boost to Mike Elgin, and this is what he thought.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike Elgin, the news director here at Twit, and today I'm looking at the LG G Stylo on Boost Mobile. We'll get into what Boost Mobile is, but this phone is a very inexpensive phone. It has to be said right away, this is a $200 phone, basically $199 is the suggested price unlocked. So that's what people pay for a contract phone. And one of the other standouts on this, of course, is that, as the name Stylo suggests, it has a stylus, sort of a throwback to the days of yesteryear or the Galaxy Note. And these are becoming more popular these days because of Samsung. And yet another strange thing about this is it's got a power button on the back. So there are no buttons around the sides, just this one here on the back. And for those of you unfamiliar with Boost Mobile, that's an MVNO that rides on the Sprint network. So all the characteristics of Sprint would be present in this phone, including pretty good LTE. Now let's get into the hardware of this thing. It's got a 5.7-inch 720p IPS display. You'd expect 720p on this, and IPS gives it a kind of nice viewability from angles and so on. It's powered by a Qualcomm Snapdragon 410 1.2 gigahertz quad-core processor. It only has 1 gigabyte of RAM. Now, there were some reports saying that it had two, but this one has only 1 gigabyte. And it has 16 gigabytes of internal storage, a microSD card support, which, of course, as you might expect looking at the back of this, is behind the battery inside. And speaking of the battery is actually pretty powerful. It's a 3,000 milliamp hour lithium ion battery. The best part of it, besides the fact that it's a lot of battery for this little phone, is the fact that it's removable, so you can get an extra battery and you can find yourself in a situation where you're never lacking battery. Now, a phone with this kind of price point, $199, you would expect to really suffer in terms of both the screen and also the camera. The camera on this phone is not bad. It's an 8-megapixel rear-facing and a surprisingly good 5-megapixel front-facing camera for selfies. Now, the rear-facing camera has some interesting features, including laser autofocus. So a single touch on the subject will both focus the picture and also take the picture. So it's not the fastest camera out there, but it's very easy to use. And the picture quality, most importantly, is actually surprisingly good. Now, this runs Android 5.0 Lollipop, and it's got a number of software applications on it. It's the kind of junkware that you expect to find on a super low-cost phone like this. But it also has something very nice, which is this Quick Memo Plus. Now, Quick Memo is LG's note-taking app, and it's optimized for use with a stylus. So you can use it to tap out text on a keyboard, the same keyboard exactly that you would use for using your fingers. But also you can kick into drawing mode. You can do all the things you might expect with drawing. You can set the thickness and color and so on of the line you're going to be drawing. It has an eraser, et cetera. And so it's very nice to be able to just type things out and then annotate that with freeform notes or pictures or sketches or whatever. And so if you're into styli, if you like to write with a pen-like device, then this is a really cool and, to the best of my knowledge, the only phone with a stylus that's anywhere near the neighborhood of this price. And so that's a very, very good option. Now let's go through the pros and cons, starting with the pros. The number one pro, of course, is $199. This is like a really inexpensive phone. I mean, this is significantly less expensive than the OnePlus One. It has this, for that price, it has a surprisingly good screen, a surprisingly good camera, very accurate colors. It's a satisfying camera to use. It has surprisingly good sound. The speaker on the back, it's a rear-facing speaker, which of course has its own problems. But given the fact that it is on the back and the price point of this phone, it's a good good-sounding speaker across the spectrum. Now, it's got good outdoor visibility on the screen, which actually surprised me quite a bit. And it looks, as you can see, this sort of metal on the back looks premium. And so if you're waving this thing around, people are going to think you have a significantly more expensive phone than one that costs $199. And again, I mentioned the battery. This has a great battery in it. It has great battery life. You're going to go, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be get two solid days out of it if they just use normal use. That has not been measured with any sort of battery testing methodology. But my point is that the battery life is significantly better than average. Now, let's look at the cons. Now, I mentioned that it has a good camera and a good screen and so on. Now, if you look at the screen, you'll see that the images are good. The color fidelity is really good, with the exception of the blacks. Now, when you get into dark areas on pictures or whatever it is you're looking at, you're going to get really a kind of dark gray. You're not going to get a really good solid black. So that's one of the things you give up when you go to something this low cost. Now, I mentioned it looks premium, and then although that's true, it doesn't feel super premium. The fit and finish is a little bit rough around the edges. You hear a little bit of creaking when you use it and press the buttons and stuff. You can hear the plastic kind of creaking a little bit. And, of course, it comes with the LG's launcher, their UI. That's burdensome and it's bloated, and you can get rid of it, and you should get rid of it if you get this phone and just replace it with the Google Now interface or something else. So the bottom line is this: a buy, try, or don't buy. I would say this is a solid buy. That you get so much phone for so little money that it's actually kind of ridiculous. This is the only phone, even I would say, in the sub $300 range that has some of the features that this phone has. It, for the most part, it feels like a premium phone. Of course, if you get into some heavy multitasking or do some serious work or you want to do anything super fast, you're going to feel that low price. But for everyday use, for, you know, especially if you want to use a stylus, this is a really, really great phone. Again, for $200, it's a fraction of the price of the highest end phones. And it's only, you know, the user experience is only a little bit less than some of the mid-range to high-end phones. So I would give this a strong buy. Even if you are buying a second phone, this is a great Android phone. If you want both an iPhone or an Android phone, this would be a great Android phone to get. And for people who like a stylus, for people who don't have a lot of money to spend, for a phone that you're going to give as a gift, this is a good phone. And I think that if you get it, you're really going to enjoy it. So before you buy, this is Mike Elgin, and this was the LG G Stylo on Boost Mobile.
It's a buy for the LG G Stylo. We thank Mike Elgin for his time with that. If you're looking for a mobile device that offers some premium features without the premium price, that might be the ticket for you. Of course, you can find Mike every weekday at 10 o'clock a.m. for Tech News Today. Just go to live.twit.tv. Mike Elgin, he is our newsman, our news anchor, a man that we trust for, well, what's all important in the tech world. Coming up next, we're bringing you back to NAB. That's the National Association of Broadcasters show. One of the questions that we get a lot is, how do you get those smooth panning shots, those shots that look like they're on rails, even though they're being handheld? Well, you could buy yourself some electronic contraption that will do a pretty good approximation of what it takes to run a proper glide cam, or you could just go to GlideCam. Here at NAB 2015, you're going to see a lot of electronic stabilizers. They're good devices. In fact, I build a lot of those into my quadcopters. But if you want smooth, organic, beautiful motion, there's nothing quite like having a mechanical balancer. That's why we're here at GlideCam, and I'm standing next to Thomas Howie, who's going to explain what they've got for every type of camera. Thomas, thank you very much for talking to us.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time. Thanks for coming by to say hello. Let me show you a little bit of what we're offering here at the NAB 2015. We have, this is our handheld line of stabilizers here. We have the GlideCam iGlide, great for cameras up to 1 pound, GoPros, iPhones. The GlideCam XR 1000, Good for cameras from 8 ounces up to 3.5 pounds. So you can get GoPros on here as well. Even the T3Is kind of stripped down in the more basic format. GlideCam XR 2000, 2 to 6 pound design. Again, DSLRs, compact cameras, and then the HD 2000. So this is kind of a range going from 0 to about 6 pounds. So this is going to encompass all the cameras up to DSLR.
Thomas, I have to ask you, there's going to be people out there who say, wait a minute, why would I buy something like this that's purely mechanical? Why wouldn't I get one of those gyro-stabilized units that has a little joystick to control the camera? What's the difference in quality of pan when I go with the pure manual?
Well, I got to tell you, that's a great question. And there's a few reasons that you would want to go with a mechanical device. First of all, you're not required to have chargers or batteries, the fragility of it all, and electronics. But then software, they're very, very glitchy, a lot of these brushless-based systems. And anytime you're dealing with software, you're bound to have problems. They're also providing a system that doesn't have 100% control. This has 100% control. When you have a GlideCam, you're fully in control of everything. It's mechanical. It's USA-made. You know what you're getting. And they're a lot lighter than some of these other systems that may be, you know, 9 pounds without a camera on it.
Now, I know that you know, people can't just pick this up and start going. There is some skill involved. So could you really quickly would say with this one, show us how do you use one of these mounts? Because you do have to use two hands, and it's sort of an art to feel out how much pressure you put so you get the right motion. Correct. Without jarring it.
Correct. Yeah, let's take a look. So with this XR 2000, for example, yeah, it's a two-hand operation. One hand's on the foam handle here, and the other hand is right underneath the central bearing. So the idea is, you know, when you're using two hands, one hand can kind of, you know, boom it in or out, up and down, and the left hand is going to control the panning and the tilting. So as you're moving around, you have the capability with using both hands. Sometimes you're using one hand, other times you're using two hands to just get the dynamic moves.
All right, let's take me through the rest of the line here, because of course it's not just GoPros and small camcorders. You go all the way up.
We go all the way up, and we're really excited about the new GlideCam Devin Graham Signature Series, and that's what we have here. This stand here represents three of the same model, but it pretty much opens up the most diverse weight offering of a GlideCam system to date. Cameras from 2 to 12 pounds. So, for example, here with the Sony AS7 with the nice Atomos Shogun on it, you'll see here is the Devin Graham here. Great system design. Again, all American-made quality. You have this QR dovetail design compatible with the 501 or the various Manfrotto heads. All you're doing is flipping the kip handle, take the dovetail out, integrates, ready to go. Fore and aft side-to-side adjust, safety spring latch. This head design is high-end precision. Again, USA-made, aluminum, aircraft aluminum design. Very rugged. It's designed for extreme applications. The gimbal itself, positionable gimbal, positive twist lock. You can move this very easily up and down the post, so you can change your balance and your fulcrum point for low mode or varying cameras, which is great. It's a water-resistant gimbal, so any type of sand or debris, this type of thing, again, extreme-type applications. Very easy to clean, field serviceable, so we're really excited about that. And to this point, I think this is the best GlideCam that's been offered year to date. And we're also very excited because it's Devin Graham. He has 533 million views on YouTube, millions of followers on social media. And with a great guy like that behind the product, you know you're going to do well.
Thank you very much for talking to us. Now, the big question is going to be, of course, price points and availability. And where will they go if they want to find out more information about GlideCam?
Sure. Price points and availability, key questions. You know, great products, great pricing. And if you want to learn more, you go to GlideCam.com, and you can see the full list of the dealer network. But check us out on social media, too, and you'll see all the updates there as well.
Thomas, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm Father Robert Ballas here, and if you want to get into stabilized shots, you could turn it on, or you could glide. You know, Brian, one of the very first projects that I did was a Steadicam, and I have to say, there's an art to it, right? I mean, with an electronic gimbal, you can pick it up and it basically goes, but with a Steadicam, an actual Steadicam rig, you have to learn how to control what you're doing really, really finely.
Right. Like, you think that you would just be able to kind of, you know, willy-nilly do it, but you have to, like, see where you want to go, watch, do your footsteps, and kind of really be conscious of what you're doing and just, you know, be very smooth. So it's, you know, an extension of the Steadicam.
Yeah. You know, the funny part was watching him use it, because he was able to, like, use two fingers and just flip the camera exactly where he needed it. It's obvious, like, yeah, okay, this requires practice, but the end result is so much nicer, so much smoother, so much more organic than what you get out of an electronic gimbal, that it's worth it, you know, even at the cost.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think maybe we need to get one for the no hole. What do you think?
Yes, please.
All right. Yeah. So let's change gears just a tiny bit. We were talking about rigs for cameras. What about actually talking about cameras, specifically about cameras on phones? Now, we wanted to take a look at a phone that had a fantastic camera, so we went to our expert, the person who knows most about Nokias. Miriam, you've got us a sexy piece of phone here. This is the Lumia,
yes.
640.
Lumia 640 from Microsoft Devices. I know it's taken me a while to get used to it. And so, you know, here it is. It's a phone for Cricket Wireless in here in the US. It's beautiful as usual. So let me explain a little bit here why this is a big deal. It was announced at Mobile World Congress. And for the price, it was kind of unbelievable spec-wise.
Right.
It's $129 on,
wow,
Cricket, contract-free, and that guy buys you a Snapdragon 400, 5-inch 720p high-quality IPS, and a high-quality 8-megapixel autofocus camera.
This is really blurring the lines between sort of the cheap feature phone and the smartphone. It's no longer less expensive to get yourself a burner for, you know, $100.
Pretty much. I mean, this would make a phenomenal backup phone in your glove box if you roll that way. Say if you have a G4 or an iPhone,
right,
or something. It's the second Microsoft-branded phone. The first was the 535, which looked very similar in terms of specs, but in terms of, like, the quality of the display and the camera was quite a bit lower end.
Right.
So this is, I mean, pretty unbeatable for the price. Let me walk you through a little bit of it. I have it here. So this is basically a 5-inch 720p panel. It's IPS, as you can see. Beautiful blacks, beautiful colors. Really, really nice display for 720p. And then in the back, there's this beautiful cover. I don't know if you can see. It's a double shot. So it's got kind of like translucent edges.
Oh, so this is not a case. That's actually part of
this
the phone.
This is part of the phone. It's actually, you can pop this back and buy different colors, right?
Like, ooh, okay.
So they get a removable battery. You got a SIM slot, you got a micro SD card slot, but this...
what bands does this have?
This is for Cricket, it's LTE,
okay.
Right? What I like about this phone is that, you know, even though it's a mid-range, you're pretty much getting a full-blown smartphone experience, as long as you feel you can work with Windows Phone, of course.
Right, exactly.
I took some pictures. I don't know if, Brian, you can show them. When I was traveling to Iceland, I took this phone with me. This is
That's an 8-megapixel camera.
It has HDR. Go through some of these photos. You can see this is low light. This is their sunset at midnight in Iceland. And you can see, like, look at that. I mean, that's really impressive. Keep going.
This is HDR now, right?
Some of them are, but some of them aren't. Keep going. There's daylight photos.
I'm seeing a little bit of a blue shift, but that just might be the
sky.
This
is not HDR.
Oh.
Believe it or not. And the next one is.
Okay.
Not that one, the one half, that's a geyser. But the next one, this is HDR.
That's beautiful.
Look at that. I mean, it's pretty impressive for a pretty much a kind of an entry-level phone.
But I mean, Lumia phones have been known to have nice cameras.
They have, and what I'm saying is that this kind of like summarizes all of these years of experience that Nokia brought to Microsoft with the Lumia imaging chops and puts them in a phone that costs $129.
So it's snappy, it takes nice pictures. What did they have to leave out to get down to that price point?
8 gigabytes of built-in storage. There is microSD, so you pretty much need to buy a microSD card from the get-go. You're not going to go very far. Even apps are going to fill up that 8 gigabytes really fast. Most Windows phones from Microsoft and others, they've pulled out the dedicated double-stage camera key that used to be part of the specs for Windows phones, but it's been removed starting with, I think, the 630 was the first one to drop it. You know, considering how good the camera is, it's a bit disappointing that they had to remove that, but it's a cost thing, I presume.
Right.
You can't
map one of the other buttons to trigger the shutter?
No, I don't think so. So it's on screen, tap on screen only. The other thing, it's pretty thin. You know, it's really rugged. I don't know if you can see, but there's lots of fingerprints on this right now. But I actually had a pretty nasty scratch in this area, and I was able just to polish it off.
I can't even tell you how to scratch.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the nice things about a fully polycarbonate-based phone, right? It comes in red, white, black, yellow, green, I believe, the different cases available. As in terms of specs, this has pretty much everything you'd expect from mid-range phone. It's very similar to like a Moto G, I guess, in terms of specs. But honestly, I think the camera certainly beats the Moto G. And then, you know, it's got a front-facing camera that's half decent. I mean, it's not a selfie-optimized phone. But, you know, there's not too much to say, but it's nice to see one of these Lumias finally make it in the U.S. on a U.S. carrier. Right. Like, the larger version of this phone, the 640 XL, has a bigger screen and a slightly better camera, and it's coming to AT&T that was announced this week. But until now, when we were at Mobile World Congress, we had no idea if these phones would come to the U.S. So it's nice to see them coming here and at this price point.
Break it down for me. So, great price point, $130.
Yep.
What are the pros and the cons?
So the pros is you're getting pretty much a full smartphone experience and very few compromises. Unlike the 535 before, last year, which had a kind of meh display, a meh camera, you're getting a good display, a good camera, you're getting everything. You know, a Snapdragon 400 quad core is a really great processor. 1 gig of RAM, also no compromise. You can play the Windows Phone games without any problems. So what you lose, though, is, you know, they did cut the corners a little bit in storage. You have to buy a micro SD card. Thankfully, it has a slot for that. But 8 gigs is just not going to cut it.
And give me your verdict. Buy, try, or don't buy?
I think it's definitely a buy. Right now, it's only available on Cricket, so it kind of limits your choices. But if you are, you know, on a budget and you're looking for an LTE-capable phone that has all the, you know, all the trimmings, contract-free, $129. You can't go wrong.
There you go.
That's it.
There you have it. It is a buy for the Lumia 640 from Microsoft, from our very own Miriam Giroir. Miriam, of course, we can find you here on Before You Buy pretty much every week. We find you on All About Android. Mm-hmm. You're a recurring guest. Where else can they find your work if they want to find what you're doing?
I'm on Twitter, on G+, on Facebook, on my own blog. The search term is Tankgirl without the vowels, at TNKGRL on Twitter. And TNKGRL.com is my blog. And that's basically where you can find me.
It's always a pleasure, absolute pleasure to have you on. And if you're looking for a burner phone, maybe this is going to be it. Next up, we want to take a look at a keyboard, but it's not just any keyboard. If you've ever tried to move your device from your smartphone or your tablet over to your laptop, then you know the pain that can be Bluetooth pairing. But what if? What if you had a keyboard that could seamlessly, easily switch between your devices? We gave one to our very own Tanya and asked her to try it out.
Hi, I'm Tanya Hall with Twit TV, here to review the Kensington KP400 switchable Bluetooth keyboard. So the keyboard comes with the keyboard itself and a pretty usable USB cord. It's pretty long here. You've got the traditional USB as well as the mini. You can plug right here into the back of the keyboard like that. You plug this into your laptop. So first, before we get it paired, I want to tell you this, the keyboard itself, what it looks like and how it feels. It's got really nice big keys. I like that. So it's not one of these mini travel keypads, which are great and certainly don't take up a lot of room. This is pretty thin, so I don't know if you can see that, but it doesn't have a lot of room that it's going to take up in like a backpack. I carry kind of a big backpack, but it's pretty portable. It's got two leg stands here, and I don't know, it's a nice size. It feels really sturdy and without being overly heavy. So when you're getting ready to pair it, you actually have a little button right back here, a switch that turns it on and off, and a little button for pairing. Hold it down, and then for my mobile device, I went into settings, I went to pairing, and I paired it fairly easily. I paired it several times. It worked out really easy every time. No problem. Then I proceeded to use the keyboard. So what I found was that it was really easy to use. It felt really comfortable. And what probably I like the best about the Bluetooth feature is that I can actually use it on my laptop as well as a mobile device or my iPad at the same time. I'm constantly getting all kinds of messages and meeting notes and that sort of thing that don't come to my laptop but come to my mobile device, text messages. What was really easy for me to do was to hit the Control 1 on the keyboard, and it immediately switched from my laptop to my mobile device. Really easy. I typed in a message and was able to go right back to working on my spreadsheet. So it was really easy. I liked that. I liked not having to pick up a lot of different devices to communicate. What I didn't like was that it did take me a while to figure out how to send the message, how to use some of the functionality of the keyboard. The instructions that come with the keyboard are not very good. And I went to search the internet to try to get answers to my questions, and I couldn't get the answers that I needed. So that was a little disappointing. It's also a little bit expensive. So from a price standpoint, you can get a Bluetooth keyboard for roughly around $20. This is about $60, so it's quite a bit more. And I don't know that the price is worth it. I really did, like I said, like the ability to have it plugged in and charge as well. And it has a battery, so if you don't want to charge it the traditional way and you want to run on battery, you can do that too. So that's another nice feature. But I didn't really like the fact that it costs so much. So the pros are that I was able to use my laptop as well as a mobile device very easily with just one, two key function. What I didn't like was there weren't a lot of instructions, and I had to figure out how to do some things that really should have been explained better. And then the price I also don't like. $60 is a little bit more. I don't know if I'm willing to pay the extra money for the keyboard. So I'm going to give the Kensington KP400 a don't buy.
That's a don't buy for the Kensington KP400 switchable keyboard. Close, but no cigar. We thank Tanya Hall. She's our booking agent. She handles a lot of the production efforts that go on here at Twit TV. You can find her. Just make sure to find us at live.twit.tv. Now, next up, every once in a while, we get to invite a manufacturer to send back a gadget that maybe didn't make the cut in an episode of Before You Buy. In this case, we're talking about this. This is a ZTE projector / hotspot / battery bank / Android device. If that sounds like a lot of gadgets, it is, because it's gadgetception. The idea is to put everything into one mobile package with a big battery and a lot of functions that we found useful, but, well, this is what we thought the last time around.
The Sprint Live Pro is marketed as the Swiss Army knife of electronics. Available from Sprint for $300 with a 2-year service agreement, the Live Pro combines a hotspot, Pico projector, battery bank, and Android device into a neat 4.7 by 4.7 by 1.1-inch 14-ounce package. The somewhat sensical combination of technologies in the Sprint Live Pro left me scratching my head, wondering if this was the most stupidly awesome gadget ever, or the most awesomely stupid Frankenstein's monster. In the end, the Sprint Live Pro is an interesting multifunction device with really bad implementations of some of those functions.
You want to like this, don't you?
I really do. I like the combination of gadgets. You know, it's a projector, it's an Android device, it's a battery bank, it's a hotspot. The problem is, you know, as I said,
it does none of them well.
It does none of those things well. I mean, the projector is okay, but it's underpowered. The battery bank's not big enough. The hotspot's horrible. I mean, if it's a hotspot, you're paying for service. If I can only get 1 megabit down and, you know, half a megabit up, It's crap.
If you were to pick one thing that this does well, would it be the projector?
It would be the projector.
Okay.
And I would say this. If I had the ability to buy this for like $300 but no contract,
right,
I actually would get it. It is a decent battery bank. It's a very cool projector. It's got a lot of features that I'd like to use, but I'm not paying that 24 months of service for a hotspot that doesn't really work. It's a don't buy.
It's a do not buy, sad to say, on, what is this called, the Sprint?
It's Live Pro.
Super Velodyne, Super Heterodyne, Transmitter, Receiver.
So that was a don't buy for the ZTE Live Pro. This is the ZTE S Pro 2. It is the new version, and as you can see, they've changed a few things. I didn't like the fact that the battery bank wasn't that big. Well, they've increased the size of the battery bank. I didn't like that the projector was a little weak. Well, they've doubled the lumen output of the projector. I didn't like the fact that the hotspot didn't work. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that because this hotspot actually worked incredibly. Now, let's talk about some of the things that this does really, really well and maybe not so well on other things. If we compare this to the original, well, we're going to see that it does have all the same features. So the original had SIM, micro SD, HDMI, USB inputs. This has the same. The other one had a battery bank. So does this. The other one supported 10 wireless clients. So does this. That's where the similarities end. Go ahead and bring the lights all the way back up, Ryan, because we want them to get a good look at this. This is going to be using Android 4.4 instead of Android 4.2. And if you go to the overhead shot, not only is it using a newer version of Android, actually, let me go ahead and bring the brightness all the way up, but it's using a customized version. This is one of the few times where I think a skin is actually a good idea. What they've done is they've made it so that the most commonly used features have their own tabs. This makes it feel more like an integrated unit. And the other one, in the original Life Pro, it felt like Android was just kind of thrown in there because why not? Let's have one more device. This actually works better. This makes the projector, the hotspot work more as a unified device. And I love the fact that they've got these buttons that come up on the home screen that can activate all the major functions. You can turn the projector on and off. You can turn Miracast in case you want to broadcast wirelessly to this projector. You can turn the hotspot on and off. And yes, it does support Google Now. I could say, okay, Google, I disabled that so it wouldn't do it. And it would go into Google Now. Also, they've increased the horsepower of the unit. The original one was a dual-core 1.2 gigahertz processor. This one has a quad-core Snapdragon processor, which means it's going to work better for your software. You saw it playing Netflix just a while ago. I can play video straight off of the USB port on this, which are really, really nice. It also increased the screen. The older one had a 4-inch 800 by 480 touchscreen. This one has a 5-inch 1280 by 720p screen. And I got to say, I love the fact that they upgraded the projector. The old one was 854 by 480. It could scale up to 1080p. This one can do true 720p. And they also increased the output. The old one could do 100 lumen. This can do 200. But it does 200 when you have it plugged in. If you've got it on battery, it does 100 like the original. But that's a good option. So that if I'm actually in a presentation area where I can get extra power, it means that I can get more power onto my screen. Now, how does this affect the battery? Well, because the battery is bigger, it now means I can get between 2.5 and 3 hours of projection time. I was getting close to 3 hours. In fact, most of the time, I was getting about 3 hours and 5 minutes of projection time. And it also means I can get 16 hours of hotspot off of a single charge. This is a much improved model. Now, the big thing for me last time, go ahead and come back to my why. The big thing for me last time was the fact that it was supposed to be a hotspot, and the hotspot was horrible. Go ahead and play some of that video. I tested the coverage on this device everywhere, just like I did with the other one. The other one I tested in New York, in DC, in Boston, Chicago, back to San Francisco. This actually came with me across the country, and I really mean across the country. We started in DC, we drove all the way through the heartland of America, up through Denver, I ended up in Hawaii, and almost never lost connectivity. Not only did I not lose connectivity, but I got some great transfer rates. Even in some of the worst areas, I was getting 5 megabits per second down and 8 megabits per second up. And in some of the best areas, I was getting true LTE speed. I got to say, as much as I give AT&T crud for being AT&T, they do a really good job with coverage. And ZTE did a really good job in making sure that this particular unit could maintain connectivity. I truly believe there was something wrong with the original version. It wasn't just that Sprint service wasn't as everywhere as AT&T. It was that there was something wrong with the unit that degraded the signal. Yeah, I mean, this is what happens when you're trucking across America. You basically have to eat everywhere. It even worked here. We were in the Arches National Park in Utah, where there are no repeaters. And I managed to get service. I was tweeting from the park through this hotspot. See, I still have a tiny bar of 4G service in the middle of the park. That's how good it was. And really, I got to say, they did a great job. Now, Let's talk a little bit about the pros and the cons. On the pro side, it's fast 4G LTE. It's got that dual band Wi-Fi, both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz that I like a lot. It's got a bright projector. It's expandable. It's portable. It's got a long battery life. The cons, really, that is expensive. It's $399 with a 2-year contract. It's $499 without a contract. And this is the big one for me. This hasn't been fixed. They've got a proprietary charger. Unfortunately, this right here kills it for me, because if I want a mobile device, I don't want to have to be carrying a proprietary charger, a charger that only gives power to this hotspot. That's just a no-go. Now, buy, try, don't buy, this is kind of tricky. If you are a business professional who is looking for something you can use in meetings, then this probably is a buy, because this isn't going to dissuade you. But if you're looking for a hotspot that could also do a bunch of other things, I'm afraid that this is going to make it a try. Now, that's still better than the don't buy, and I truly believe that at some point they're going to swap this out with a high-power USB-C, and that will make this device an absolute buy. So I invite ZTE, send me your next version, the next revision, and we will give it another redemption. And straight off the bat, if you swap out this power supply and make it easier for me to travel with what's supposed to be mobile, it is going to get a buy. That's it for all. That's all we got for this episode of Before You Buy. We want to thank all of our reviewers for the time, the effort that they put into their reviews, especially to Mike Elgin, to Tanya Hall. We also want to thank everyone here who makes the show possible. Of course, that's Lisa and Leo. That's Karsten, our super producer. And Brian, could you please tell the folks where they can find you on the Twit TV network?
Well, they can find me doing the screensavers tomorrow. What time does that start? It's supposed to be 3 o'clock Pacific time. Wait,
that man's supposed to be on vacation. This is magic.
He's not going to be there tomorrow. He's leaving us to our own devices, Padre. I'm not sure what's going to happen tomorrow.
He's going to be on a boat.
Have fun, Leo. So yes, watch the screensavers tomorrow. Know How on Thursdays is a lot of fun. And I'm sure there's something else, but we'll get to that next time.
We'll get to it later. Don't forget that you can watch Before You Buy every Friday live-ish around 2 o'clock p.m. It normally goes a little later because we tend to stack up on Friday. Live.twit.tv. And as long as you're watching live, why not jump into our chat room at irc.twit.tv? You can give me live feedback. I've got a little screen here so I can see what you're talking about. You could ask questions. Maybe we'll answer them on the show. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballester, the Digital Jesuit, and remember, you gotta watch before you buy.